Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 13-785, Colio versus Hawaii Public Housing Authority. Arguing for the petitioner, Philip W. Miyoshi. Arguing for the respondent, Craig Iha. Also appearing for the respondent, John C. Wong. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, Counselor. Are you all ready to proceed today? Both sides? All right. Very well, Mr. Miyoshi. You've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so you'll get a warning light with 10 minutes to go. Mr. Iha, you'll have a warning with 5 minutes to go on your argument. Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. This case arises from the Hawaii Public Housing Authority's wrongful eviction of Fetu Kolio from his home located in Mayor Wright's housing. Mr. Kolio, along with his wife, was a longtime tenant of Mayor Wright Housing pursuant to a rental agreement with the Housing Authority. On or about May 2012, Mr. Kolio pled guilty to second-degree theft for misappropriating approximately $1,400 from the Mayor Wright Housing Tenant Association, of which he was the president at the time. Based on such conviction, the Housing Authority evicted Mr. Kolio from his home pursuant to the claim that his conviction was a violation of the rental agreement. However, under the plain language of the rental agreement and the eviction rules, Mr. Kolio should not have been evicted based on this conviction, and both the Circuit Court and the Intermediate Court of Appeals erred in upholding the Housing Authority's eviction order. We start with the rental agreement because that forms the basis of the relationship between Mr. Kolio and the Housing Authority. The Housing Authority claimed that Mr. Kolio violated three particular provisions of the rental agreement, particularly 8D, 8E, and 8P. Under 8D, the provision requires Mr. Kolio to observe all applicable laws, rules, regulations, and ordinances of governmental authorities that pertain to an established standard for residential applicants. 8E is a similar provision that says Mr. Kolio needs to abide by the project rules. We believe the record shows that there has been no rule, regulation, law, or ordinance related to 8D or 8E that the Housing Authority showed that Mr. Kolio violated. Really, what this case is about is about 8P. Under 8P, that rental provision requires that the tenant shall not engage in any criminal activity or alcohol abuse that threatens the health, safety, or right to peaceful enjoyment of the premises, residents, neighboring residents, or the management employees. Now, there are two components to 8P. First, that there be some criminal activity or alcohol abuse, which is not applicable here, and that activity would threaten the health, safety, or right to peaceful enjoyment of the residents. Now, in enforcing the rental agreement, the Housing Authority is bound by the rules set forth in Hawaii Administrative Rule 17-2020, which governs eviction proceedings. With respect to the first component, the criminal activity, the Housing Authority failed to establish that he engaged in any applicable criminal activity. And this is because under HAR Section 17-2020-2, criminal activity is defined specifically as, one, either the illegal manufacture, sale, distribution, or use of a drug, or the possession of a drug with intent to manufacture, sell, distribute, or use a drug, or illegal activity that has as one of its elements the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force substantial enough to cause or be reasonably likely to cause serious bodily injury or property damage. We would submit that Mr. Kolio's conviction for theft in the second degree does not satisfy that definition of criminal activity. And on that basis alone, we believe that eviction board, circuit court, and the ICA erred. In fact, it looks like in the ICA's opinion, they don't even address 17-2020-2 at all. And they skip right to the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment component.
Do you understand, it's difficult when you go back to try to figure out why exactly everyone skipped over what seems to be a requirement. I mean, are they, I understand that. It looks like to me, after this case, and I can't say for sure, but they've now redefined almost everything in an attempt to address this case in the new rules. But what's the reason for just overlooking it?
That's correct, and I don't know the exact reason why it was overlooked, but when you go back and look at the grievance hearing decision, the initial decision, and then the hearing order, it's clear that they focus simply on criminal activity. In fact, if you look at the initial hearing order, not the finding of fact conclusion law, but the order that was issued prior to that, upon which the eviction hearing was done, the hearing officer at that point pointed simply to the word. In fact, he bolded it and he put it in all caps, any criminal activity. And so I think that's what started the focus of this, and for some reason or whatever reason, we submit, we raised this issue at both the hearing and in the our appellate briefs. But for whatever reason, this language was simply ignored all the way through these proceedings, and we believe that on that basis alone. The other thing I think where some confusion lies is in their reference to the CFR. The CFR, I believe that's 966-4, which provides what the states, what's supposed to be required to be put placed in these particular lease agreements, in public housing lease agreements, in the federal government has set forth a number of obligations, including things related to whether or not, you know, criminal activity would threaten the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment of the residents. And they don't, you know, admittedly, they don't make reference of what criminal activity is. But the state of Hawaii did, in its Hawaii administrative rules, it went on to describe or detail what criminal activity would constitute criminal activity under this particular provision. And I think much of the confusion may have been born out of just a straight analysis of the CFR and not really looking at what also the Hawaii administrative rules said with respect to what criminal activity is.
Mr. Miyoshi, in your application for writ, Mr. Shirai, you only address the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment. You don't address the failure of the of what his actions to constitute a criminal offense applicable in this case.
Your Honor, I would, Justice, I would take a look at that, but I thought we had provided at least
whether the ICA, your question presented is whether the ICA erred in affirming the order evicting Colio from his public housing accommodation on the basis that he failed to show, that the HPHA failed to show that Colio's actions posed a threat to health, safety, or the right to peaceful enjoyment.
Your Honor, that's correct. That would be an accurate assessment of the question presented in that particular thing, but I believe our arguments raised in the application itself raised this issue of whether or not his conduct constituted criminal activity in the first instance, and I believe that's explained in on page 7 where we assert that Mr. Colio's conduct or conviction did not constitute any criminal activity, and we particularly state that.
You're alleging this under, this is an error of law. Is that what you're alleging?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yes. And so we would submit that even if there was some, you could somehow believe that the criminal activity was sufficient, or that the conviction for second degree that did somehow constitute criminal activity, that under the Boston Authority case, that activity did not threaten the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment of the of the premises or the residence in the premises. There's one other provision I'd like to address, and that's what they've raised in their papers below, and that's a rental agreement, section 10L2. And they've argued that there is a violation of this provision as well, because under 10L2, it states that notice of termination can be given if there's been a any member of the household has been convicted of a felony. And we would submit that this particular provision is essentially a notice provision. And you have to read this provision in connection with all the other obligations under the lease agreement. And so to the extent that they would argue that you can, this provision stands for the proposition that any felony could result in your eviction under the rental agreement, we would argue that that's incorrect. Number one, because it is simply a provision that talks about what type of notice or how much notice the tenant is entitled to receive if there's been a default or violation of the lease agreement.
What about the project manager's testimony that peaceful enjoyment or any kind of threat of health and safety is a lot of times physical, but what people don't know is that it can also mean emotional as well? I'm speaking on behalf of the residents of Mayor Wright Homes. Is that a kind of injury that you believe cannot be taken into account as a matter of law, or is it your conclusion that that testimony just didn't go far enough in establishing any kind of threat or emotional harm to the other residents because of the theft of funds that were intended for their benefit?
Yeah, I think that certainly emotional harm is a type of injury that could affect somebody's health. Obviously, there's a number of ways abuse happens, whether it's physical, emotional, verbal, but we would argue that in this instance, there was no concrete evidence of any of that happening. All that was set forth or submitted by the Housing Authority was, well, these funds could have been used for some sewing classes, reading classes, but there was no evidence that any of these funds were earmarked for these programs. And I think that...
Could I interrupt you there? Why isn't it a reasonable conclusion that in this case where the funds were actually stolen from the Tenants Association, that would threaten the peaceful enjoyment of the living environment of the tenants because they're in the presence of somebody that they can't trust? They're in the presence of somebody not only can they not trust, but somebody that they might not trust in their living environment. It has to do with the Tenants Association.
Well, I think that he obviously wore two hats in this, Mr. Colio. He was the president of the Tenant Association, and he was a tenant. And we believe that those are two separate relationships that he held. But I think beyond that, I think there's a fine distinction between something that's designed to improve or benefit somebody and that's something that actually threatens them. And in this instance, to the extent that those funds were designed to improve or benefit somebody, the fact that they weren't available doesn't necessarily mean that it threatened their health, safety, or peaceful enjoyment.
Do we even know they weren't available? I mean, there's a couple things. When she was asked at the hearing, I think, she said, well, she didn't even know how the funds were used in the prior years. And then I didn't see anything that said the feds didn't reimburse it, or I didn't see anything that said I know he was paying restitution. This record is so empty of showing that people actually were aware of it, knew of it, their programs were going to be deprived. What kind of programs? It's all speculative.
And that's why we would point to the Boston Housing Authority case, because in that case, I think they had a similar circumstance where the funds, a tenant was evicted for fraudulently using one of the Housing Authority's credit cards. And the basis of the eviction was that the if that tenant had billed up on this particular credit card and then that housing authority employee had to use it to help her sick child or do something, that would have threatened the health and safety of that employee. And in the Boston Housing Authority case, the appellate court said, no, that's conjectural, that's speculative, and that's not enough to establish that, in fact, that conduct threatened. And they looked at a couple of things. Number one, they looked at what the common notion of threatened the health and safety, and they acknowledged that, listen, embezzlement, financial fraud, that's bad. I mean, you know, that's not a good thing. But whether that threatens the health and safety and peaceful enjoyment of, in this case, the residents of the housing authority, they said that wasn't implicated in their general notion of what threatens the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment. In addition, I think if you look at what Judge Reifert, you know, stated in his dissent, he concurs with that and goes a little bit further and talks about what the plain language and the plain meaning, the plain definitions of health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment are, and didn't believe in this instance that would have implicated those particular standards.
Mr. Miyoshi, you know, I'm sorry. Based on my review of the record, it appears that your request for stay, I thought there was a request for stay, but in any event, Mr. Colio has actually been evicted, is that correct?
That's correct.
So what is the remedy you're seeking here?
The remedy we're seeking is that he be reinstated to his, you know, to his right to have residency at the housing, in public housing authority. He's been, essentially the eviction order bans him from essentially having any benefit of public housing assistance. That would be, you know, in our view, the remedy, him being able to go back. His wife still remains in the public housing. The initial notice of violation was against both the husband and the wife, and they determined that the wife did not have knowledge of this, and therefore she was allowed to stay, and he hasn't, and so they've been separated, at least from a physical sense, because they can't otherwise afford, and she can't afford to have to stay at other housing other than the public housing. If you don't have it, there's no other questions.
Thank you very much.
I'll reserve my time.
Mr. Iha.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, HPHA was right to evict the petitioner because his criminal activity threatened and, in fact, harmed the health, safety, and peace.
How do you get over the definition of criminal activity in the rules?
Your Honor, if the court is going to focus on the definition of criminal activity, I think there's two main reasons. The first is that if this rental agreement, interpreting the rental agreement within its four corners, the court should look at the plain meaning of criminal activity and not a more restrictive definition that's present outside of the rental agreement.
But that's how you defined it. I mean, that's the agency's definition.
Yeah. And let me just add, and you can answer both of us, because the title of that, it's HAR 17-2020-5, and it's called Grounds for Termination, Tenancy, and Eviction. And my question, like Justice McKenna, is how do you disregard something that's specifically written for it?
Well, Your Honor, the definition of criminal activity in 17-2020 refers to an alternate grounds for eviction. So that section, and I believe it's cited in the ICA majority opinion, allows for eviction for, one, a violation of the rental agreement, which is what this Chapter 91 appeal is focused on, and also eviction based on criminal activity as defined in that section of the rule. And the other reason, Your Honors, is that the federal regulations require the public housing authority to include as a provision in its rental agreement that a tenant can be evicted for any criminal activity that threatens the health, safety, or peaceful enjoyment of the premises. And the authority cannot restrict that definition, and in fact they did not, because the more restrictive definition of criminal activity refers to the alternate grounds.
Did you argue preemption?
It was not argued, Your Honor. It was not argued. However, it does inform, I believe, it should inform this court's interpretation of the term criminal activity and how it's used in the rental agreement.
What was the actual evidence of a tenant who stated that his or her health, safety, or peaceful enjoyment was affected by Mr. Colio's conviction?
Your Honor, at the eviction board hearing, there were four pieces of evidence. The first was the statement of the project manager, and there were three letters submitted from other board members in the association. And they wrote about Mr. Colio's actions and how they, I apologize, I can't cite to the exact wording of the letters, but they talk about Mr. Colio's effect on their ability to improve the conditions for the other residents in general. And
it's general, right? They talked about, well, we could have used the funds for something, but they never, was there any testimony that specifically said, this is what we used the funds for before, and this is what we planned to use the funds for that would involve health, safety, or
Well, Your Honor, the funds categorically under federal rule were restricted to those kinds of activities. So as defined even in the dissenting ICA opinion, health refers to the state of being sound or whole in body, mind, or soul. Peaceful refers in part to a state of public tranquility. And the CFR restricts and mandates that these funds are used to improve the quality of life of the tenants, resident satisfaction, self-help initiatives to improve the living environment for families living in public housing. And Your Honor, I think that those...
It's farther than health, safety, and right to peaceful enjoyment. That's a lot broader.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the as used in this rental agreement and as defined even in the dissenting ICA opinion, sound or whole in body, mind, or soul is broad, and it refers to the well-being of the tenants. And I think to characterize...
Do we know if the money wasn't restored? I mean, it's not in the record, right? In fact, at the hearing, wasn't a lot of questions by those people were asking about restitution. It almost seemed that if he had concluded his restitution, it wouldn't have evicted him.
Your Honor, I believe that at the hearing, and I apologize, I don't have a pin site, I believe that it came out that he had not completed his restitution.
Exactly, and they seem to be really, really focused in on it. And I think that's one of my concerns. If he had had the means to pay it off, maybe we wouldn't be here.
Actually, does the rental agreement give him, aren't you supposed to give him notice of default and an opportunity to cure? I mean, not that he did it within 30 days, but, I mean, your notice doesn't even give him an opportunity to cure.
Well, Your Honor, this, you know, his criminal activity really wasn't something that he
but
would
your
have been cured.
Default provision in the lease clearly on Section 10, it says, in case of any default of tenant in the observance and performance of any covenant herein, management shall notify the tenant of default in writing and shall specify the time limit with which the default and noncompliance must be remedied and corrected. If tenant fails to remedy and correct, it's la-di-da, management may terminate. However, management shall not terminate or refuse to renew this rental agreement other than for serious or repeated violation of material terms of this rental agreement, such as failure to make payment due under this rental agreement or to fulfill tenant's obligations set forth herein, or for other good cause. Okay, and then it requires you to give, and you're alleging a violation of 10L2, although this is actually a default provision. But I'm just wondering, you know, even your notice doesn't seem to give any opportunity for cure.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, his criminal act is something that he wouldn't have been able to take.
Well, you allege 10 in your notice, you allege 10L2, and 10L2 actually applies is a, if a member of the household is engaged in any drug-related criminal activity or violent criminal activity. And you didn't even allege 10L3 in your notice, which is the if any member of the household has been convicted of a felony. So you didn't even raise that as a basis for the termination.
Your Honor, the notice says what it says. Okay.
So what provision of the lease did he violate?
That would have been the provision in 8P.
The criminal activity
that's
that
right,
threatens.
And
okay.
That's the issue that the petitioner has raised in this
and you,
appeal.
And you think we should ignore your definition of criminal activity?
Your Honor, I don't think that it's ignoring the definition. I believe that that definition of criminal activity applies to a very distinct provision in the HAR that is an alternate basis for eviction. In this
is there
case,
any other HAR section that governs the practice and procedure for terminating the tenancy of persons in public housing? Is there any other chapter?
Not that I know of, Your Honor.
Then why is this an alternative procedure?
Because that chapter provides for a separate basis for termination, and that's a violation of the rental agreement. The rental agreement says that they can terminate for criminal activity that threatens health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment, and that is the provision that is mandated by federal rule to be a part of the rental agreement.
So essentially you're arguing that we should interpret that provision of the rules very narrowly.
That definition of the rules should be restricted to the termination venue for criminal activity set forth in that rule, Your Honor.
Okay. The general purpose clause of this section of the rules say, these rules shall be liberally construed to ensure that the rights of the parties are preserved in a just and timely resolution of every hearing. It sounds like to me you're giving an exact opposite effect of what that purpose clause says.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that. It's undisputed that petitioner has engaged in criminal activity, and based on the broad language in the rental agreement for health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment, he stole the other tenants' funds, Your Honor. And these are people who by definition have very little by way of financial resources.
But shouldn't somebody have testified to that? You're making asking us to make all sorts of assumptions. He stole money. I wouldn't want to live next door to somebody like that. I would. But do you have anybody saying, I don't feel safe with him? And also, couldn't those funds be used for, like, teaching residents how to play chess?
Your Honor, that would contribute to the wholeness of a resident's mind or soul.
Right. But is that health, safety, or not being able to learn how to play chess? Would that mean health, safety?
Your Honor, that kind of enrichment, Your Honor, would improve the and maintain the residents' mental health, their emotional health,
yes,
their well-being.
Yes.
And it falls within the plain meaning of health, Your Honor.
Would that threaten health? Not having something like that would threaten someone's health? I mean, you use the funds for this purpose, but that doesn't mean by not having the purpose it necessarily threatens a person's peaceful enjoyment or
Your Honor, it directly harmed their peaceful enjoyment.
What was the evidence that
in other ways, Your Honor?
Your Honor,
there was the testimony of the project manager. And in addition to that, Your Honor, just the nature of his criminal activity, petitioner was in a position of trust placed there by the other tenants. He stole $1,400 from the project tenant participation fund, which was essentially their money, Your Honor.
It's not their money. The money is going to be used for beneficial purposes. The money comes from where?
It comes from the federal government, Your
Honor.
That's
correct. So when you said that they stole their money, that wasn't exactly. It's money that's been allocated by the feds. And again, we don't know if the feds haven't reimbursed it because there's nothing in this record indicating one way or the other.
Your Honor.
Can I ask you a question about, and it it's not specifically related to this, but I, as I read this, the name of this board is called the Eviction Board. Is that correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And my, you know, one of the things, and it's just not, it doesn't really specifically affect this appeal, but one of the things that concerned me when I read something, I wondered if the persons who go before some an entity called the Eviction Board would think that maybe there's some preconceived outcome by a title of the board saying it's the Eviction Board. I mean, in other words, we don't call our courts the conviction courts. And I'm just wondering if there's been given some thought to perhaps allowing the name to be more neutrally termed so that a person may feel that they are getting, you know, a neutral, objective evaluation of the matter that's brought before you.
Well, thank you for that comment, Your Honor. That is certainly the board's objective. And if people who come before it could, if that would be more plainly stated to them. Thank you, Your Honor.
Coming back to the record again, I asked Mr. Miyoshi about this. I'll ask you. So we have testimony from the project manager that said it can also mean emotional as well, speaking on behalf of the residents. Again, is that the only evidence regarding, other than inferences based on what the purpose of this money was, is that the only direct evidence of impact on the other tenants, or is there other evidence there as well?
Your Honor, there is the testimony that you referred to, and there are three letters submitted by other members.
And what in your view, does that other do those letters add to establishing a record that there was an emotional impact on the tenants?
Your Honor, I believe that reasonable inferences can be made that his conduct in not being responsive to the other tenants, the project manager's observations regarding the state of the residents in the public housing project, you know, reasonable inferences can be made that there was this, that there was a betrayal of trust, a massive loss of trust. If you can't trust your tenant association president, I'm not sure who you can. And again, Your Honor, these are people who lack very little by way of financial resources. And even though these were federal funds, they were controlled by the tenant association, and they were intended solely for their benefit, Your Honor.
Couldn't that argument be used anytime anything was stolen on the premises, that if something is taken, you know, if it's a plant that's, or some painting that's in a common area, that you've got a theft and therefore you have a betrayal of trust of everybody? Is that how we want these things applied?
Well, Your Honor, I think this case goes beyond that, because the petitioner was placed there in this position, in a very unique position by his other, by his fellow residents, and it goes more towards the greater impact of his actions to the tenants as a whole. You know, far beyond the theft of a plant or other community property. But again, there may be instances where that kind of activity does threaten the health, safety, or peaceful enjoyment.
And Mr. Iha, how do you distinguish Boston Housing Authority, where money was fraudulently taken with the use of a credit card to belong to the Housing Authority?
Well, two ways, Your Honor. The first is that in the Bryant case, the Massachusetts court was reviewing a summary eviction proceeding that was expressly restricted under Massachusetts statute to certain kinds of criminal activity that are physically destructive, violent, associated with violence, or visibly asocial, and that's not the case here, Your Honor. And the other thing is, in that case, the chain of events was admittedly speculative and convoluted. So they surmised that the employee's credit rating would be harmed. Because of that, she wouldn't be able to get credit to purchase things in the case of emergencies. For example, to buy medicine for a sick child. It actually turned out she didn't have any children. So the chain of events in that case was a lot more speculative than what we have here, which in this case, the petitioner stole funds that were required to be used solely for the benefit of the tenants.
You know, I mean, this really is governed by the rental agreement, correct? And there's just nothing in here incorporating the tenant association or to comply with tenant association rules or things like that. I mean, you could have easily have done that, but it's not in here. Well, and you define good cause in here, and I don't see anything in the good cause for termination. I don't see anything in here that matches this situation.
Well, Your Honor, his actions as the president of the association.
I agree. Reprehensible.
Right. So I suppose one thing that could have happened was he could have been removed from the board. But that's not the only remedy that the rental agreement allows.
Where? Show me.
It is in the provision, Your Honor, that allows for eviction for criminal activity that threatens the health, safety, or peaceful enjoyment.
So that is your only basis, correct?
That is our basis, okay. Your Honor. And his position on the board, while he was subject to all of these other requirements, his position on the board put him in a spot where he could impact the health, safety, and peaceful enjoyment of the other residents by stealing these funds.
Anything further at this point?
Your Honor, may I check my notes for a second? Nothing further.
Thank you very much, then.
Thank you.
We'll hear in rebuttal, Mr. Miyoshi, anything from you?
Thank you. I'd just like to make one point, Your Honors, and that is that, you know, the theory that the HAR 17-2020 is some type of alternate means to terminate a tenancy. I don't think that that's what the statute says. In fact, in the statute, that particular statute is specifically referenced by the eviction board in reference in conclusion of Law 7, which says that they conclude pursuant to 17-2020. And so it's clear that they took into account these particular rules. The rules particularly state that these are the rules and the guidance you use in enforcement proceedings in public housing. Authority matters, and so we would not subscribe to the argument that the 17-2020 is somehow an alternate means of terminating tenancy.
How do you respond to Mr. Iha's argument that they were required to put in any crime that threatens health, safety, and right to peaceful enjoyment by the federal regulations?
Yeah, Your Honor, and we agree that the 966-4 is federal regulations that requires, and in fact, most of that language mirrors what's in 966-4, but I don't think that there's anything in there that says that the state couldn't further delineate or define what criminal activity is, and I don't think they've pointed to anything in the CFR that said that there would be any limitation on what the state could define as criminal activity.
Anything further?
Nothing further.
Very well. Thank you to all of our counsel in this case, and the court will take this matter under advisement.